go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Thursday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and just tickled to pieces to be right here with you. Golly, Ned, did you hear that? Now, just to make things clear, on the second Wednesday of the month, not the first, not the third, not the fourth, but the second Wednesday of the month, Mark Levine, our very own, gets to do terrestrial radio in the Washington, D.C. area on some Pacifica station there. The other Wednesdays of the month, they have people who are, shall we say, talent-challenged. But Mark goes in there, and the phones always go bing, 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 and light right up. But I don't think I've ever heard anything quite like that. Lord, talk about sex sells. Gee whiz. And I guess it does. I mean, people like to talk about that because, I guess for similar reasons, we get to talk about other people's hypocrisies. And that somehow, I guess, validates our own sense of propriety. Is that what's at work here? That's all I can figure. But that was just amazing. And of course, earlier today, with Agnes being in full-time granny mode now, and mommy mode at the same time, we don't get to go over stories together, news events, as much as we used to, and what with the only news channel be remaining on our crappy elastic little cable system being Fox, there's just not a whole lot of news watched on the TV box. So she and I were talking about the Spitzer thing earlier today, and I told her that apparently the evidence suggests that the woman who did whatever it was she did for Elliot Spitzer got $4,500 for doing it. Agnes looks at me and goes, $4,500? I said, yeah. And I walked out of the room, went about my business, came back here, show prep, little of this, little of that, phone calls to make, that kind of thing. A little bit later, I walk into our bedroom. Agnes has the bags out on the bed, and she's packing. And I said, honey, where are you going? She says, I'm moving to Nevada. I said, what for? She said, well, women out, from what you tell me, there are women who get $4,500 for doing what I do for you for free. You know, we've been married almost 15 years now, so I know better than to fight. So I just walked away. A little bit later, though, she walked into the bedroom, and I had my bags out, and I was packing. And she said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Vegas. She said, why? I said, I want to see you live on $4,500 a year. I'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Try the veal. God, if she finds out that I told that old chestnut with her in the leading role, my life won't be worth a nickel. So, you know, it'll be our secret, okay? Shh. I mean, I'm just funning. But About $4,500? Sex? What? When you never mind. I'm done with it. I'm not saying anything else about it. Because to me, I pity the voters in New York. The voters of New York put Eliot Spitzer in office by a landslide in excess of a 70% majority. And between him and a slimy Bush administration Department of Justice U.S. attorney, you know, one of the ones that didn't get fired because they were being a loyal, he, she, it was being a loyal Bushy. All those New York voters who chose Eliot Spitzer just got, yeah, they got their votes peed on. That's all. So, you know, that's, what more is there to talk about? His lieutenant governor, Patterson, I believe is the man's name, getting ready to take the reins of power, so to speak, and we shall see where the case goes from there. But there are so many other far more interesting stories banging around America and the world today. Mitt Romney, for instance. Mitt Romney, who has come out and said, no, not that kind of coming out, come out and said he would be, not that anybody was, you know, particular, it's not like he got the 3 a.m. phone call from the McCain camp or anything, but I'd be honored. My haircut and I would be honored to be vice presidential nominee with John McCain. Why, yes, I'd jump at the chance. And this would be a good idea for John McCain. Why? I'm telling you, it's abundantly clear. Mike Huckabee is the only guy, and look how he's cozying up to Rod Parsley and Hagee. And he'll cozy up with the rest of the filthy religion industry before it's all done, too. And it's all in the hope of getting the sick, twisted, bizarre religion industry fundamentalist vote. I think any Republican leader in the country would be honored to be asked to serve as the vice presidential nominee, myself included, Willard Romney said. It was his first interview after bailing out of the GOP primary process. He called Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama chihuahuas and McCain the big dog. Well, I guess it's true. I mean, chihuahuas, they leave little bitty problems, laying on the floor or the porch or whatever. But McCain, by being John McSame, Lee's going to leave a great big stinking problem wherever he happens to hunker down. I think you look at this quote from Mitt Romney and you almost have to get all Marilyn Monroe. I think any Republican leader in this country would be honored to be asked to serve as the vice presidential nominee, myself included. That's not politics. That's pathos. Willard Romney. Pathetic. So, there's that. There's a million other things. Later. There's the blast in Iraq that killed 10 Iraqis that the Pentagon said killed nobody. You read this? As of Wednesday, the Pentagon had released a statement saying that this bus was hit by an explosively formed penetrator, an IED. The Pentagon speak memo said, Operational reports confirm one U.S. soldier and one civilian were wounded in the convoy. However, it turns out that Iraqis buried 10, 9 women and a child.
You mean we're supposed to count the Iraqis as human beings? Oh, didn't know that. Sorry.
Bus driver Zaki Abdul Qader said, "We approached an American convoy of fuel tankers and Humvees coming from the opposite direction. Suddenly, I heard a bang and a fireball with smoke filling the bus." Television pictures of the bus showed it pocked by shrapnel marks and its windows blown out, but otherwise unscathed. How do you use "otherwise unscathed" in a sentence that says all of its windows were blown out and it was pockmarked by shrapnel? "Otherwise unscathed" really doesn't apply anymore, does it? The bus was carrying 50 women and children and 3 men who had been attending a mourning ceremony for a relative in the city of Najaf. Well, for pity's sakes. Military sticks against something. Anybody dead in here? I don't hear anybody saying they's dead. Ain't no dead. Somebody tell the Pentagon ain't no dead here. I mean, they're Iraqis anyway, right? There were 9 caskets, but 10 bodies. One little girl was able to have her body snuggled into the casket with her mama. Gaida Mustafa Jassim, 4 years old, was all wrapped up in a piece of white cloth. I'm sorry, I misspoke. She was tucked into the same casket as her Grammy, Amrika Sadoun, who was 65. But they didn't merit counting by the Bush administration Pentagon. They weren't quite human enough for that, I don't suppose. Quoting from the story again, "They were only peaceful women who went to Najaf for a mourning ceremony. What crime had they committed to get killed in this terrible way?" Well, their crime, sir, was being in the way of the Bush administration's occupation of your poor, poor, poor country. And frankly, when you've killed a million, what's 6 or 7 or 10? Hell, they'll probably forget, even if they thought about counting, they've probably already forgotten about the little kid. You know, in the Pentagon, we count caskets, not bodies. A spokesman for British military forces in the nearby southern city of Basra, Major Tom Holloway, said he was still trying to work out the number of casualties after police initially reported 16 people being killed. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says, nobody, a couple people get some scratches, but nobody was hurt. Really? This is the Pentagon. This is the welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the circus. This is how the United States Department of Defense operates. The Bush administration Department of Defense is an abject embarrassment to the entire history of our military and the honorable service it has given. Now, let's look for a little further proof of the idiocy of the Bush administration Department of Defense. What was it, a couple of nights ago? We were talking about the Kellogg burn and loot contaminated water scandal, in which the vile and filthy water that was provided to American soldiers for bathing, washing, and shaving and laundry was so polluted as to literally burn their skin. Well, there was a press briefing yesterday at the Pentagon. Maybe I'm getting to this a little bit too late, but when I saw it, I just kind of sat there and went, because, I mean, the guy in the video, the guy on the audio, the guy you're going to hear is a very well-paid charlatan. He's a well-paid flack. He's a well-paid flim-flam man. His name is Jeff Morrell. Just like the mushroom, Morrell. Only Morrells are considerably more appealing than this cretin. He was asked about the poisonous water. The water that was meant for bathing, washing, shaving, laundry, that kind of thing. And this is what Jeff Morrell, just like the mushroom, had to say.
To the Pentagon IG report on the dirty water that was supplied to troops in Iraq by KBR, what is the Secretary's comment? What is your comment?
I haven't spoken to the Secretary about it. You know, we've all been to Iraq several times. Everywhere you go, they make it perfectly clear that you don't want to drink the water. So I'm a little surprised myself that this is an issue. As I understand it, the bottled water, which is what you're supposed to be drinking in Iraq, had no issues whatsoever in the testing that was done. Evidently, there was some issue with some of the other water that was, I guess, primarily meant for washing. But still, based upon this IG report, which I think is over 14 months old or something by now, the period in question, there's no evidence that any of the illnesses were related to the water. So as far as we can tell, there was no widespread.
How much BS is the American public expected to swallow? I mean, I'm just asking. Try again, Jeff. Try again.
With regards to the Pentagon IG report on the dirty water that was supplied to troops in Iraq by KBR, what is the Secretary's comment? What is your comment?
I haven't spoken to the Secretary about it. You know, we've all been to Iraq several times. Everywhere you go, they make it perfectly clear that you don't want to drink the water. So I'm a little surprised myself that this is an issue. As I understand it, the bottled water...
Who said anything about bottled water? We tell you, when reporters go over, we tell you not to drink the... Did some of you people drink the water? Anything to keep from having to deal with the slimy, miserable, un-American, unpatriotic, profiteering, price-gouging actions of Kellogg Burn and Loot. My God.
Which is what you're supposed to be drinking in Iraq, had no issues whatsoever in the testing that was done.
The bottled water was great. Isn't that good bottled water? You guys have had the bottled water. The bottled water tastes fine, doesn't it? Jeff, buddy, we're not much interested in the bottled water. We're talking about the standing, fetid, brown, rusty, dun-colored, stinking pools of untreated filth that was passed off by Kellogg Burn and Loot to our soldiers, our Marines, for their other uses.
Evidently, there was some issue with some of the other water that was, I guess, primarily meant for washing.
Some issue. There was just some issue. I'm not sure what the issue was. I'm sure it didn't have anything to do with open, weeping sores on the skin of the soldiers or anything. It was some issue. The water wasn't wet enough. That's what it was. It wasn't wet enough, the water.
And but still, based upon this IG report, which I think is over 14 months old or something.
14 months old, and we're just now getting to it. Don't blame me. Blame the Johnny-on-the-spot professional media. Little Osley on the uptake, A, if you know what I mean. So,
thing by now, the period in question, that there's no evidence that any of the illnesses were related to the water. So as far as we can tell, there was no widespread health.
None of the issues were related to the water. The issue, the illnesses were related to the stuff that was in the water. See, so it's not about the water. It's about the stuff in the water. So, there's no data to support that that there was anything wrong with the water itself. It was classic the oxygen dihydride. It was classic H2O. It was the good stuff. It's the stuff that was in the water. But the water's fine. Jump right in. No, you jump in, Jeff.
Risk or illness associated with the few problems that were discovered with the water system. But I think our encouragement, as always, for journalists and warfighters alike, is read the signs and just drink the bottled water.
Okay. Well, just drink the bottled water. And don't bathe while you're there. And don't wash all the blood and gore and guts that get splattered all over your BDUs no, don't wash your clothes either. No bathing, no washing your clothes. And when the general comes around for inspection and asks you why you haven't shaved in 18 months, you can just tell him to piss off. Generals love it when you tell them to piss off when they ask why you're not all neat and tidy in your little army costume. Where do they dig these people up? He starts I haven't really talked to the secretary about the water issue, and then proceeds to just babble on. Since I've told you that I haven't talked to the secretary about the water issue, I'm just going to make a bunch of crap up for the next 5 minutes. Okay, are we square on that? Okay, good. Why are you asking me about water that's full of evil junk that they were? Let's talk about the bottled water. The bottled water is really good. We got great bottled water. So, God Almighty. Now, meanwhile, while Jeff Morrell was giving the finer points of God, he's like that awful Adam Sandler character. What was the movie? The Water Boy. Yeah, and this is some good quality H2O. Well, while that was going on, Dear Leader was letting the cat out of the bag a little bit. Big news. He was telling jokes, because he's a funny guy, that George Bush. He was telling jokes about the upcoming wedding of his precious lumpkin, Jenna. Sheesh. He said, I had to face some very difficult spending decisions, and I've had to conduct sensitive diplomacy. That's called planning for a wedding. Now I'm going to dance. Yeah, after they got Jenna her abortion, she and her boyfriend have decided they're going to get married down at the ranch in Crawford. Because we all saw the pictures of her with her baby bump. So the guy comes to me and he says, I want to marry your daughter. And I look at him and I say, done deal. Yeah, George, we want to hear all about the wedding. There are people who can't make their house payments, and you're telling us about the wedding. There are people who can't go to the doctor when they're sick, and you're joking about how much money you're going to spend on the wedding. Pardon me if I can't get all misty.
Well, she looked up peach in the dress she made when she was still a mama's little girl. And when she walked down the aisle, everybody smiled at her innocence and curls. And when the preacher said, is there anyone here got a reason why they shouldn't wear? I should have stuck up my hand. I should have got up to stand.
I'm
right, we're done with our first half hour of this Thursday evening edition of Head On. And I really could have done without the bridal news, if you know what I mean. There's just... But then again, maybe I'm just a hard ass. Maybe I'm just mean. Maybe I can't get to that place where I can, partake in the royal family's the joyous property transfer agreement with Mr. What's his name? Henry Hager. Yeah, I hear he's going to bring me some really good Sansibelt slacks. But, you know, there it was, beaming out for all to see on the CNN website. Nothing in there about what her color scheme is, at least. Green. It's going to be green, just like the family money. That's always the color we use, green. We like money. We're Bushes. Oh, by the way, a little follow-up. From today's New York Times. You remember Westland Hallmark Meat Company of Chino, California? Remember how I said that, some poor little $5 an hour meat packing guy would get dinged for it, or maybe a handful of them, but nobody would ever touch the boss man? The president of a slaughterhouse at the heart of the largest meat recall denied under oath on Wednesday, but then grudgingly admitted that his company had apparently introduced sick cows into the hamburger supply. He then tried to minimize the significance. The executive, Steve Mendel, of Westland Hallmark Meat Company, said, "I was shocked. I was horrified. I was sickened," when he was talking about the video that showed employees kicking and using electric prods and bulldozers and forklifts on downer cattle that were too sick to walk, sticking one in the eye with a baton, hosing them down with high-pressure fire hoses that would have made Bull Connor proud. He appeared before the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He, of course, would not show without first being subpoenaed. That's the way it is with these right-wing punk-ass thugs. Not American enough just to show up and own up. He assured lawmakers that despite his lack of knowledge about conditions at the plant, sick animals were not slaughtered for food, so no safety issue existed. Because, after all, we don't call what we serve to school children food! Yes, the sick animals never were slaughtered for food. No, there was no safety issue. But then they showed a second video in which a downer cow was shocked and tortured by workers who were trying to move it to what they call the kill box. Then they finally shot it through the head with a bolt gun and dragged it by means of a chain to the meat processing area. And he went on to tell the committee that he was unaware of the abuses. I mean, my office doesn't look out on the slaughter area. No, okay, you see, I'm making that part up. He was asked, this is a quote, really, "What's your curiosity as president and CEO of the company you're responsible for?" Curiosity? Curiosity. Mama always said curiosity killed the cat. My job as an American CEO is to be as incurious as possible. Now, see, I made that part up, too. So, Mr. Stupak of the committee, Bart Stupak, a Michigan Democrat, who was in charge of the hearing, asked him if one could conclude from the video that the cow dragged into the killing area had gone into the food supply, and Mr. Mendel, suddenly turning all Vulcan, said, "That would be logical, sir." No, Mr. Mendel, it would be sickening. It would be revolting. And frankly, I think you should have a big plate of downer cow tartare myself. And people holding guns should surround you to make sure you ate every last bite. Meanwhile, Mr. Mendel also ratted out the undercover investigator for the Humane Society who dropped the dime on him. He tried to contradict the investigator's accusation that when he was hired at the plant, he hadn't received the required training in humane handling. So Mendel says, I've got a form here with me that acknowledges he had such training. But you see, these are at-will employment situations. So whatever they hand you, you damn well sign if you want the job. Yeah, this thing here says you've had humane handling treatment. You had your humane handling treatment, didn't you there, Javier? I see. Good. Go get on the forklift and move them dying cows over to the kill box. Get with it. So they managed to find a way to get the name of the investigator into the record. $50 million of the 143 million pounds of beef that were recalled went into the school lunch programs or federal programs for the poor or the elderly. Mr. Stupak, Bart Stupak of Michigan, a Democrat, made that clear. And there was a recall, but it was also made clear that since this was a process of some 2 years, most of the disgusting meat had already been eaten by the sick and by the elderly and by the poor and by the children. Who was Mr. Mendel's lawyer? Why, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Whitewater. Mr. Mendel's lawyer was Asa Hutchinson, that un-American bastard who had his filthy mitts in up to the elbows in the hunting of Bill Clinton. He's also a former undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And he complained that his client, Mr. Mendel, still did not have all the facts about the events shown in the videotapes. Mendel did apparently have enough facts to be able to say, I think there is less than a minute chance of that product being contaminated with mad cow. Not much of a chance at all. And now the Congressional Committee is trying to figure out how to keep this from happening again. Spokeswoman for the Agriculture Department, Amanda Emich, said, we have no comment. Why don't you see my buddy, Jeff, over at the Defense Department? He can tell you. You know what? Here's my comment from the Agriculture Department. Just make sure you drink the bottled water. One of the things the committee, the congressional committee, is considering is requiring food irradiation. That's right, subjecting meat to radiation to kill the E. coli that gets on the beef because the beef gets wallowed around in cow feces. Because, you see, Westland Hallmark Meats has had a little E. coli problem in the past, what with having been completely shut down because of the big jack-in-the-box E. coli outbreak. And Westland Hallmark had been a supplier of meat to Jack in the Box. I remember seeing a story of a little 4, 5, 6-year-old little boy who died from kidney failure brought on by E. coli 157H7 during the Jack in the Box scandal. But that's okay if 4 or 5 or 6 year old little boys die from kidney failure brought on by exposure to E. coli 157H7, because the shareholders have to have a profit. What do you not understand? Profit is what matters. Screw a bunch of 6-year-old little boys whose faces blow up to the size of basketballs as they lay dying when their kidneys fail. The hell with the little boys. There's profit to be made here. And for God's sakes, you wouldn't want your betters eating the downer beef, would you? I mean, you wouldn't want a Rockefeller having to eat downer beef, or a Bush, would you? You'd want that downer beef to go where it needs to go, to be consumed by the poor. You know, in the days of the Aztec Empire, they'd have human sacrifices at the top of the pyramid. And because that particular culture had some rather severe limitations on protein availability, the priests would rip the living, beating heart out of the sacrificial victim and then throw the sacrificial victim's carcass down the back of the pyramid, where it would be served out to the poorest of the poor in that society. This is pretty much the same thing, isn't it? Take the most undesirable, unconsumable, unsafe meat products and kick them down the back stairs to the little school children in the food lunch program that the repiglickens hate in the first place. Send it out and let Granny eat it at the local old folks center and the retirement homes. Let the people in the mental health facilities we have remaining in this country, let them eat the bad meat. Hell, they're crazy. They'll never know it. Little children, you know, they don't have very well developed taste buds. For God's sakes, they like to drink the chemical concoctions like Sunny Delight. They have no taste buds developed yet. Give them the lousy meat. Mr. Mendel, would you like to... Oh, no, are you kidding? My God, I had a Chateaubriand last night that could not be beat. It was... Oh, my God, it was Kobe beef all the way from Japan. I think that stuff was about $100 a pound, and it was like butter. You could see the marbling in the meat structure. It's beautiful. Yeah, that's enough of that. Let's go to the phones. Why not? What the heck? Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
All depressing, ain't it? Depressing, frustrating, ain't it?
Just another day in Happy Valley.
Hmm?
Just another day in Happy Valley.
Yeah. I still think, I still think they're trying to get rid of all of us, and they want to bring people over from other countries to be their slaves, because they know a lot of us won't consent to be slaves. We might have to be, but I don't know. It's just, I guess I was trying to say yesterday that you can't believe anything that they tell you just because they say something now. Like he says, I'm sure it's mad cow. Nobody get mad cow from it, you know. Well, yeah, it was safe for the people to go up and work at the Twin Towers.
Sure, just another day on the job. Just another day being a cog in the great capitalistic miracle money machine. Sure, why not?
Everything, it's just a lie. Everything is just a big fat lie. And I just saw a little headline about people are wondering what to tell the children about Spitzer. Ain't that something now? All this other stuff, and that reminds them about when Clinton was Clinton. All this other stuff, all these other lies, and all these murders, and all that, all the corruption. Oh, well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't affect your children.
No. What will we? You're right. What will we tell the children? You know,
right.
It's interesting you should ask, because my son asked me, and I said, well, you know, he went to a hooker.
Yeah.
And he said, he was the governor of New York? And I said, yeah, son, he was. He said, that's kind of pitiful, isn't it?
How's the babe?
He's a quick one, that boy.
Yeah. Oh, you can learn a lot from them.
And he says, you mean to tell me, Dad, that the governor of New York, that powerful a man, has got to pay for it? I said, apparently, whatever it was he wanted, he had to pay for it. He said, what do you mean, whatever it was he wanted? I said, that conversation happens when you're 16.
Might have it before. They hear a lot of stuff.
My ability to be frank with my kids is limited in scope. I can only do it in small doses.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to explain people hanging naked from chandeliers.
I understand. I'm just...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. Yeah, or, you know,
we've been facetious, but... They will hear a lot of stuff. I could tell you some things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he picked, you know, he's 12 years old. He knows what a hooker is.
Huh?
He's 12 years old. He knows what a hooker is.
Oh, yeah. He knows what a lot is, I'll bet you. But I did want to tell you about a guy I used to work with that you were talking about, the Gulf War Syndrome. They're finally now admitting there was such a thing.
Yeah, or causes for it, yeah.
And I worked with him, and he was in the National Guard, worked all over in different disasters, you know, such as hurricanes and tornadoes and so forth. And he had two daughters. He had one that was in her early teens, and then he had one that was like, about 6 or 7. And he was a maintenance man, and maintenance men have to have some strength, you know. He and his oldest daughter, they were both did karate together. And he was called to go over in Desert Storm in what it was, that 1991? Was that when it was?
Yeah.
Okay. When you see him now, he's in a wheelchair. He's been in a wheelchair for quite a while. He's lost a lot of his hearing. He's still got a lot of his mind. But he's just lost so much. And he has to have, those things to prop his hands so he can move his hands. And this is what, you know, and he had to fight to get any kind of help. And
it's pitiful, you know, isn't it? It's just pathetic.
So I know people, you know, in fact, that whole squad or whatever of the National Guard that he went with, they all had problems, just about all of them. But to see him the way he used to be, and he probably when he went over there, probably wasn't much over 40. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how old. And
came back a wreck.
Yeah, and it's just a gradual happening. And he's a fighter, though. He fights for, you know, to try to get some help. But it's just a shame. You know what? The reason I said that he did all those other things was he wasn't a lazy person. You know, a lot of them, they try to say, oh, well, they're lazy or they're mental, or they tell them all kind of stuff. It was all in their head. And I'm talking about, why do they want to lie to you? And that guy about the water, I'd like to see him go somewhere and have to find water.
Wouldn't you like to give him a big glass of that stuff that was causing the sores?
Yes. I'm telling you, it is unbelievable. Even if they had the water, they have to wash it, and your skin is the largest organ that you have in your body, of your body. And bad water goes into your skin quicker than it does when you drink it. It goes into your system. I just learned that a few weeks ago. And
mercy sakes.
It just breaks my heart, like, the way they treat people and they treat animals. I hate the way the animals are being treated. And they're driving the whales and they're driving the dolphins crazy. And I know that it's because of all the stuff that they're doing down there. The whales, they go out, they beach themselves and commit suicide. And people say, oh, well, they care more about whales than they do people. No, I care about both.
Well, if you're creating a planet that the whales can't live on, what are the odds of humans?
Right. And they haven't got sense enough to realize that if you destroy God's creatures.
Well, there are, I forget what the official term is, but there's some benchmark species, worms and frogs and birds, and when they can't survive, it's about time for humanity's ticket to get punched, too, because we will follow thereafter.
Yeah, and you got, like, the frogs and fish being hermaphrodites or something.
Yeah.
And the bees are disappearing. I don't know, but just...
Yeah, because pesticides and can you imagine... The bees are overworked. I read an article about this a few months back, and yeah, there's some stuff that's probably happening with the bees, with pesticides and so forth. But their worlds are completely upside down, because what happens is the guys own semi tractor trailer loads of beehives, and they start out, say, in California, and they drive to Kansas. And they put the bees to work in Kansas, and then they put them back on the truck and they drive them to Georgia, and then they drive them to Florida, and where bees, you know, usually bees take a winter rest, you know, they hibernate, but instead, because they're just constantly being worked, you know, it's bees are fascinating animals.
Yeah.
And instead of letting them have their rest time, my God, we've turned bees into a right to work issue.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Migrant workers too.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I didn't know about that part of it until you just told me. But you know, that's another reason that I quit going to my church, is because, and some of the preachers on TV, oh, they care like more about the little owl, and they care more about that. They don't, you know, it's people. Well, if we don't, like I've already said what I think, you know, and that's another reason I quit, because they don't care about animals. And I heard that story that John Fox had about the cat called Ugly.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
It was. I sat here, and, you know, I produced John and everything. I sat here when John was reading that, and I teared up. It was kind of pitiful.
Yeah.
Agnes came in, looked at me, and said,
That
you know, you're just a marshmallow.
That cat was just a little bundle of love, and...
And I ran out, you know, I walked out on the porch after, you know, it was dark and cold and everything, and walked out on the porch to speak to our own cat. I said, "Hey, doing, buddy?" And he just looked at me. "I'm okay. Yeah. Don't you need to be inside? Isn't it bedtime?" "Well, yeah, I'll go back in now." But it's he does the same thing. I walk out and he immediately rolls on his back and is like, "Scratch me, okay? I mean, that's your job, man." So I love that thing. Juanita, I'm going to roll along.
Okay.
I've got a couple blinking here.
Okay.
I don't know if they're still callers or not.
Have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye now. And let's see. Nope, we got two bailouts there. Sorry about that. But it's I saw an article just the other day in my list of things and didn't get to it or didn't fully read it, so I didn't put it in the stack. You know, and the query was, is it the end of British bees? Dying all over the planet because of safe pesticides. You know, it's worth remembering that we started the conversation with Juanita, with her mentioning that study of Gulf War I and the very tail end of the story. It was one of those buried lead situations. The very tail end of the story mentioned the fact that the symptoms that were being suffered by Gulf War veterans were virtually identical to symptoms suffered by agricultural field workers. But, you know, we won't worry about them. I mean, after all, you know, they're agricultural workers, and I mean, you know where they come from. Right. That's part of our problem. We've got a whole list of people that, you know, we won't worry about them. And oddly enough, it turns out those people are the ones who need worrying about the most. It's... just incredibly sad, incredibly frightening, heartbreaking, and to be honest, you know, because I'm not the Shell Answer Man, I don't know. I don't know where it takes us, but I don't think I like the ride. Do you? I suspect you don't. So we've managed to get through an hour. And let's, you know. Let's see what happens in the next one. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Hush, little girl, sweet, sweet baby, don't cry tonight. Daddy's here and he'll sing you a soft lullaby tonight. Why can't it all be like it was before? How can I explain why mommy's not here anymore? us. Daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Daddy likes rubbing against little boys on the bus. I think that's why your mommy left us. Little girl, there is no reason to fret tonight. Don't mind the smoke, Daddy just wants to forget tonight. Soon it will all be like it was before. Poker and drinks lots of beer. Then he wants sex that involves mommy's rear. Daddy has sores on his genitals oozing with pus. I think that's why your mommy left us. Please don't cry. I swear. Daddy gets home from the bar, visits his bookie and steals a new car. He'll drive to the strip club, and if Daddy plays his cards right, he'll bring home your new mommy tonight. Lady-day, lady-day-day-day-day-day-day-day-day. Lady-day, lady-day-day-day-day-day-day-day.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Sorry, but thinking of a man with the power of Elliot Spitzer having to resort to hookers, not that I'm, you know, I'm not being sanctimonious or anything. It's just kind of pathetic. Like the boy said. That's just kind of pitiful, isn't it, Dad? Yeah, it is. And then that sick little song popped into my skull. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about internet radio. I don't have to worry about some the supercilious, sanctimonious, holier-than-thou freak at the FCC or L. Brent Bozo the third of, third. Of the Parents Music Resource Television Council or some idiotic organization like that getting his maiden forms all in a twist because I played a song that has that said genitalia sores and whores and made the two rhyme. I love the freedom of the internets. I truly, truly do. And let's see. All right. Let's go to the phones and find out if this is actually a caller. Yes, it appears to be. Hi, who have I got?
You have Malin from New Jersey.
Hey, Malin, how are you?
I'm okay. I saw this special one today on BBC, and can you hear me, or is this turned up loud enough?
Oh, yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay. It was on the homeless people because of the bankruptcies going on in Los Angeles and all the other big cities in California. Because that's obviously one of the states affected by it. There's these huge tent cities that are going up out there, and the people are living just pretty much the way we saw them living from Katrina, only these are white, middle-class people. It was really shocking and to not see it on our own television is a disgrace.
Well, Malin, when are they ever going to have time to show it on our television? After all, there's important stuff to be shown, like the fact that Britney Spears has got a gig as an extra on a TV show. I mean, we got to keep our priorities, don't we?
Well, Kim came home today, and he was so angry. He says, they're talking about Elliot Spitzer, and you know, I live in New Jersey, and I didn't even know that Elliot Spitzer was the governor of New York, and I really don't care that he was anyway, but I thought he still worked with something to do with the stock market or something like that.
Attorney General, yeah.
I only care about who's my own governor mostly, and then they don't turn out to be too good anyway. But this whole thing about the homeless, I think it's like what you would call a movie that is not a real big movie, but it's like a sleeper, and it's going to become a much bigger issue, I think, than what they're making it out to be.
Well, I think you're right, Malin. It's going to become a bigger issue because it's going to become a sector of our population that becomes even larger. You know, if you ask a right winger about the homeless, they'll say, "Well, you know, whatever homeless we have, they're homeless because they're insane. They want to be homeless." They've been making that argument since the Reagan administration. I mean, I was around to hear it then, and you hear it now.
Well,
all that does is give you an idea of exactly how hateful your average garden variety conservative is.
Well, the homeless people that I always took as homeless people, thinking back in the 80s and the 90s, were generally, I'm sure what you thought, were usually the people that just were like hobos and you know, homeless, you know, people traveled around, sort of like gypsies, you know. But these are actually families, whole families of people that just don't have anything really left.
Yeah.
They took even their furniture. And because they had to get a value, they couldn't get enough value out of the value of the house, you know, so they took their things that were belonging. And it just made me so sick when I saw it happening, and that the people are living. I mean, in the United States of America, people are living and cooking like they are in Iraq on stones piled up, and they're cooking like we would go camping. I mean, you know, that's a different thing, because you want to go camping. But it's such an awful thing that has to be. It shouldn't be happening in this country. It should not be happening. I don't know. Am I off base here?
No, you're not. No, you're not. A country such as this. I heard a story the other night about an individual who's sick and can't get it and doesn't have any insurance and can't see the doctor until, you know, something like 3 weeks from now. And my response to that was to say, you know, and we allow this to happen in America. We allow this to happen.
Yeah,
the right wing and the religion industry, Malin, are constantly talking about sin, and yet they never seem to get around to the things that are real sins, do they?
Well,
a nation of 300 million people that is ostensibly the best nation on earth, the most godly, the most Christian nation on earth, that is willing to sit back and tolerate one out of every 99 of its adults being imprisoned, that is willing to sit back and tolerate little children living in the streets or at best in an automobile, that nation has very little to recommend it, does it?
I have the worst feeling that this is going to become like a normality. You know,
yeah, that's what I meant. That group that we call homeless is going to become bigger and bigger and bigger until we get serious about making America into what America is supposed to be.
I wanted him to say something.
Oh, okay. Well, I understand.
Well, he came all upset about why there's not a bigger story about Britney. There's something about Britney Spears and Spitzer and there's so many things on the stock market, you know, in the dump, and the food is going up and the oil's going up. If the oil goes up any more here in New Jersey,
we cracked $110 a barrel yesterday, Malin.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have a 1,000-gallon tank in your house and you get 1,000 gallons to keep your house warm for the winter, that's a lot of moolah.
Yes, it is. That's bank-breaking money.
So I think if it gets to the point where I'm hearing more and more people say, if it gets to the point where it's much above 150 barrels, I think this country will come to a screeching halt, because I don't think it can keep on functioning that way with those prices, and people will not be able to survive.
Right. Well, what we're headed for is probably something considerably worse than the likelihood is that you and I may remember it, and folks slightly older than us, the so-called stagflation of the 70s.
Yeah.
Where everything goes up except wages. And I mean, we're talking about heating. For people in the Northeast and who heat on fuel oil, this is the kind of thing where people have to break the bank and go into their retirements in order just to have heat through the winter, and make really, really impossibly hard choices between food and heat.
Well, it's going to get to the
and the greatest nation in the world doesn't make those choices, Malin. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I know. Well, I forgot to. What were you saying? I interrupted you.
No, merely that when we tolerate that, we can't call ourselves the greatest nation on earth anymore. And that's part of the dog and pony show of the political process. It's so sickening, because none of our politicians, by virtue of the way they are treated by the media and by virtue of the way that they are treated by the Republican Party, nobody can get up and talk honestly about where America is. We're broken. We're busted. Everything in this country is broken. I mean, do you get that sense, Malin?
Well, I have been listening to a great many people on different talk shows, and just recently, several of my friends here, close friends, have said to me that there is something in the making. Something is happening where there are too many problems in the world right now for anybody, whoever gets elected, cannot make everything right, which they never could. But I mean, I can't remember any other time in my life, maybe because we didn't have the internet, but I know in the 60s, Vietnam War was like the only thing you heard about. And we heard about, social unrest, the riots and that. But you didn't hear anything about other countries starving or things like that. It was just, and now it seems like the whole world is just, everything that happens is negative. Nothing a good, never good news. Now they've got this thing on wheat. There's some kind of a fungus growing on wheat, which is, I got off the BBC, which is going to be taking over some of the Iranian wheat and Indians into the Indian country of India, and it's in down into Indonesia, and it takes 7 years to make new wheat that will be immune to this fungus that grows, and this could send us into a worldwide famine more than what we already expect.
There's stuff happening with wheat. There's stuff happening with rice as well. I saw an article a couple of weeks ago that it's a first time thing that there is a worldwide rice shortage on the market.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you eat a lot of rice, that's the problem. But we just stop eating beef much anymore. We don't eat much beef, and you just eat what you can afford. But it, you get tired of eating pork and chicken all the time. So, okay, I won't keep you any longer. I just wanted to throw some of my complaints out there. And
well, I appreciate it, Mel, and I truly do. And we try to have a giggle here once in a while, a little bit of a laugh. But I sit
oh,
back.
Oh, that was great! I missed the whole thing there for a little while, then I caught on to it.
And but it's all gallows humor now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's hard to just keep on being negative all the time. You just need a break once in a while. You know?
Yeah, and I try, you know, I try not to be so negative. But how are you supposed to get happy about things like this? I mean, you mentioned you said in the 60s the Vietnam War was in front of your face all the time. I got a story here, headline: fewer, no number of U.S. deaths in Iraq. Dig this, Malin. We're coming up on the fifth anniversary of George Bush's...
The military that doesn't know what...
No, it's the American people.
Oh.
We're coming up on the fifth anniversary of George Bush's attack on the people of Iraq, and this story says, according to a Pew Research Center survey, only 28% of those asked could correctly state that about 4,000 Americans have died in George Bush's war.
I think I heard that, and it's sort of ironic that it would reach the anniversary of the fifth year to be the 4,000.
Yeah,
but I'm more concerned about, in a way, you know, when they're dead, but I'm so concerned also about the people that have to live their lives crippled, and that in a way is like a hell in itself, you know.
Well, at least they've got a Disney functionary at Walter Reed to tell them that it's a small wound after all.
It's like a theater. They say it's like a theater production or something. I don't know how.
That's exactly what it is. Malin, it's awfully good to hear from you.
Okay. Okay, Bob. You have a nice evening.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye now. And rolling along, I think.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan. What's up?
Well, I just thought I'd tell you that the ultimate irony, I think, you know, my husband, he was in World War II and Korea.
Right.
He's had to stop going to the VA. You know why? We can't afford it.
What?
Yeah.
We can't afford... What do you... Copays and... Oh, God.
Can't afford the copay.
We're going places in this country, Susan, that we don't want to go.
I mean, you want to talk about shameful.
Yeah.
That man put his wife on the line. He's got a watch with a dent in it where a bullet hit. That watch was over his heart. The watch took the force that would have killed him.
Well.
Well,
consider, when we started talking, I just took a quick peek at the clock. Dig it, Susan. In the time that we have been talking, we have just spent on the Iraq War $240,000.
Yeah.
60 seconds.
What I could do with 240 grand.
Yeah.
Hubby could have his gallbladder surgery. We can't afford that. We can't afford copay. So we've got to sit here.
And if you're in that situation, if you and Donald are in that situation, Susan, how many thousands, how many tens of thousands, how many hundreds of thousands of others are similarly situated?
Oh, and it gets worse. It gets worse. Because the last bill we got from the VA, where the previous month I had said, okay, bag this, I'm paying the whole thing off. So I paid it off, and here's the bill comes, and it gives me this itemized account, and it says, it showed my payoff posted to the account, such and such, da, 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 da. And then it showed interest payment. And I'm going, huh? So I call them up. And I'm saying, you guys charge me interest on a bill I paid off? They hemmed and they hawed. And then they said, we'll get back to you. And then when they called me back, they said, well... And they made it sound like they were doing me a real big favor to take that off of the bill. Never mind the fact that if the money had been posted to the account, which I had proof of, they can't levy an interest payment on a bill that wasn't there.
Right. You can't levy interest on zero.
Yeah.
You can't.
Okay,
multiplying by zeros, no matter how hard. Yeah, no.
Exactly. So, question is, I read my bills, and I'm smart enough to scream bloody murder. How many people just say, "Oh crap," and pay it?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And how many people can't afford even that $1 or $2?
Osama bin Laden holds no terror for me.
No.
But the people in this country, Susan, who are willing to let this happen, scare me to death. Because I don't know where they think it's going to wind up. You know, they're, oh well, we're going to send you a $300 rebate check and go to Walmart.
Yeah,
that does no good. It does no good.
Yeah, we can stimulate China's economy.
Yeah.
They want to stimulate the economy. Hire a bunch of people to build bridges and roads.
I know.
Of course, that would require them to admit that FDR was right.
No, well, that's going to be the ultimate downfall of the American people, Susan. This twisted, and you know, nobody's more militant about the First Amendment than I am, but this twisted idea that a corporation pouring tons of money into the public relations campaign, the twisted idea that you know, to keep America from fixing what is wrong with America, the idea that constitutes free speech is going to be our downfall. Free speech is what's happening right now. Free speech happens on the courthouse square. You know, freedom of religion happens in the religion industry centers every time the doors open. But by God, Harry and Louise busting health care reform in 1993, that was not free speech.
Right, exactly. And whoever it was that dreamed up that idea of corporations being people. I'd like to resurrect him from whatever grave he's buried in so I could cut his
throat. Well, use the Google and go look up Santa Clara versus Union Pacific Railroad, 1886. And you'll find it right there.
Yeah, I know.
There's
law clerk.
It was the clerk of the Supreme Court.
It wasn't even a Supreme Court justice.
There's an entire page devoted to it at Wikipedia, and it's quite informative.
I will acknowledge a corporation as being a human being the day it gives birth.
Or the day it drops dead.
Physical birth.
No, the day it drops dead.
Well,
because that's the thing, they're immortal. They are immortal persons.
Yeah, the day I hear a corporation screaming from the transition labor page, then I'll acknowledge it's alive. Till then.
Wait. That's just an IPO. That's a joke, Susan. I'm working here. I'm dying. But the thing is, we're going to blithely go along and let it happen.
Yeah, like lemmings over the cliff.
No, because lemmings are at least going somewhere. We're going to sit still and passively let it be done to us. And I don't mean to be, you know, Mr. Prophecy or anything. I mean, I'm not crazier than a sprayed roach and living on an island. Oh, the great whore of Babylon.
Wow.
No, this doesn't take any magic, and it doesn't take any godly inspiration to take a good long look at the burgeoning class of people who are tortured and tormented in this country
by crappy wages, jobs being sent overseas, inability to get health care, and realize that there is a reckoning coming to this country that we have not begun to even contemplate, most of us. You have, I have, folks listening to the Horn have, and we've developed a damn fine gallows sense of humor out of it, just like what I was saying with Malin.
Oh, yeah.
But most of America has not.
Yeah, and they have no idea what's coming.
By the way, we're up to $2.4 million now.
Oh, geez.
During this conversation, we've spent $2.4 million in Iraq.
Nice, expensive conversation we're having here, isn't it, Bill? Bob, don't mind me. Just after I hired into the corporation I went to work for, which eventually outsourced my job to Canada, God bless NAFTA, not. Anyway. I was walking down the hall, down to my little cubicle, happy as little, pig and slop. And I'm walking down the hall, and here's these bulletin boards on both sides, you know, encouraging worker productivity and all this stuff. And I look over, and I about lost it, because some... Well, this was a whole building full of tech support workers, i.e. geeks. And you know how we geeks think. Somebody had put up a cartoon that said it had Bush, not Bush, it had, it had the worker and the union, and it had the corporation, and the worker and the union were being told by the corporation, bend over, honey, here it comes again. And needless to say, that cartoon didn't last 20 minutes.
That's yeah, fun. And as quick as they found out who put it up, neither did that worker. Sure.
Well, the fun part was the witch hunt they held and the fact that they never did find it. Because we protect our own. I knew who put it up.
Yeah.
You don't think I'm going to think out on him, do you? Last I heard, he was still working there.
I'll be darned.
Good for him. And occasionally dropping a subversive cartoon here, there, and everywhere.
Oh, goodness. We're down to cartoons.
Hey, you do what you can where you can. The guy had kids to feed.
Sure. And, I don't know what, like I said, if it's happened to you and Donald, I don't know what's, we had the story the other night where we have to decide between Veterans Affairs here and paying a long overdue pension to the fighters who fought side by side and were commanded by American officers in the Philippines. When we're down to that kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, there's not... there's not long left.
Yeah. Well, my husband is convinced that basically he's also what is known as a Knox baby.
Oh, so were my mom and dad, and they went to their graves fighting for the Notch legislation.
Yeah, well, so is he. And he's convinced that the government is sitting on it, just waiting for everybody to die.
Oh, so am I. So am I. I'm absolutely convinced. My mother, rest her soul, would get so livid when she talked about the Notch that you could not console her.
Well, maybe we ought to tell people what the Notch is.
Yeah, do, please, for those who don't know.
Okay. For people born in a certain, generally, you start paying into Social Security, everything's cool, and then proportionally you get a certain amount back when you retire. That's roughly what works. However, people born in the years, what exactly were the years? I can't remember.
You know, I think it's between 1922 and 1926 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. People born in those years are, you would think they would get the same amount as anybody else. However, for some weird reason, they get less than everybody else, even though they have been paying into it right along.
And at the same rates.
And at the same rate. Which makes it fundamentally unfair. Do you think we can get the government to do anything about it? Nope.
Most likely not. I know.
We were even willing to settle for a one-shot payment of, which wasn't all that big. But the government said, no, we're not going to do that either. They're just going to wait for everybody to die. And God damn you. Damn you to hell.
Yeah.
I hope you heard me, Agent Fred.
I know.
That's the type of thing we need to stop the Iraq war for, so that we can start paying.
A day of the Iraq war would take care of the notch.
What?
A day of the Iraq war would take care of the notch.
Oh, God, yes. A week of the Iraq war would fully fund the VA.
But that's entitlement spending. I got this list of Bushisms from one of our oldest listeners the other day, and one of the things on there, and direct quote from dear leader, was, "Yeah, these people talk about Social Security like it's some sort of federal program."
Yeah, I love that one. You dip, it is a federal program.
I know.
Oh. Did you see the news report? 53% of the American people now are optimistic about the Iraq war. Doesn't that just make you nauseous?
Yeah. Oh, dear. Let me check this. Let me check this report from your co-ninja Gene. Oh, charming. Just a few minutes ago, I was talking about how, you know, crude hit 110 yesterday. 111 today.
Not surprised. Do you know what, you know how often we use our car? We drive it once a month to the grocery store. We drive it on rare occasion to the doctor's office, and then we don't drive it at all. That's how much driving we do.
And they're finally beginning to point out, Susan, that this has everything in the world to do with the weakness of the dollar. And yet, Dana Perineal was asked about it the other day, and she said, everybody's under strict instructions not to talk about the dollar.
Small.
I know. Susan, hang in there. Give our best to Donald. He deserves better. He deserves far better than his country is treating him.
So do the American people.
Some of them are part of the problem. You know. I gotta ask. Did you ever get around? Did you ever get around to watching Idiocracy?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't. Let's see. Going to movies or renting movies is something we don't do. We don't have money.
Oh, I know. I know. If this hadn't been mailed to me, I wouldn't have seen it myself. But when you do get
about $150.
When you do get the chance, I've just about come to a theory. Come up with a theory. Every American must watch Idiocracy. And for anyone who doesn't realize that it's not a science fiction movie, that it is a current commentary on the state of the nation. Anybody who doesn't realize that loses the right to vote.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
I think that's a reasonable answer.
Well, like I said, our best to Donald, and take care and have the best night that you possibly can, Susan.
Oh, I will, and love to Agnes and the little ones.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with your phone calls, 877-443-2366, toll-free. On your nickel, if you've got an unlimited long-distance plan, 304-658-3333. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Shadows approaching me.
Right, and 20 minutes before the hour, welcome back to this Thursday night edition. God, I hope nobody climbed into a bath and got the a warm bath and got the razor blades out during that tune, but it just, you know, it just kind of seemed to fit. So, you know, I'll try to be a little more upbeat next time, okay? Still, Alan Parsons Project. I mean, it's good stuff. And we'll go to the phones. Robert's joining us from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob.
How are
you?
Okay. You know, yeah, I haven't. Like I said, the bath's not running for me either yet.
Okay. Now I realize you moved up the show because you have that daylight savings time.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it, It created a little bit of havoc for John Fox too, because it it pushed his show back an hour earlier in the day.
Yeah, the Japanese can't imagine moving time around as if it was a piece of furniture. But yeah, I think they tried it one time since I've been here, which is just resulting in chaos because the conservatives here just couldn't imagine doing it. So too many complaints, and they never did it again.
Well, the Japanese people are creatures of order, and by creatures I mean nothing negative. But they
Go ahead.
And so I can see where something like daylight savings time would really get under their skin.
Exactly. With Susan, I just on Idiocracy that she can find it in four parts on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's where I watched it.
Okay. So. Okay. Well, do you get the nature of my theory? Anybody who doesn't realize that it's a commentary on current America.
I mean, that's what I said. I mean, that's what we both said last time we talked about this. Yeah.
Right.
It was,
and if you can't figure that out, you don't get to vote anymore.
Right. But I mean, and it's really a commentary about the American people. I mean, even with this housing crisis, this was a result of the housing boom 2 years ago, and I couldn't believe it was actually happening myself, because I had this, crappy old house that my renters had torn up in Franklin County, Florida, and one of the poorest counties in Florida, if not the poorest one, I sold it for four times the price that I thought it was worth. I looked at it and I said, I wouldn't have paid $20,000 for it after all the damage that was done. But I guess the neighbor wanted to buy it so he could sell it to some people. The plan was to bring people down from Atlanta, the people that were burnt out and going to retire, and settle them in Franklin County. And that was the game plan. So houses there were selling for everything. And I couldn't believe it, because Franklin County is a very tough county to live in. There's nothing there. You're an hour away from Tallahassee, Florida. And in every season, there's different kinds of insects that will make your life miserable. Yellow flies, deer flies, dog flies.
Oh, deer flies. I hate a deer fly.
Oh, the yellow fly is worse, because they're as common as house flies, and their sting is worse as a bee. This is where the NATO troops actually practiced for the invasion of Normandy. Well, not NATO, but the American troops.
Just because
the village is actually the officer quarters for the American troops.
I'll be darned. But you mentioned the boom and the bust, and as a my own high estimations of myself, Robert, I think I'm a fairly intelligent human being, and when I see that something is booming, I know that it's got to go bust.
Yeah,
why is it that the people that get paid six and seven figures and eight figures and nine figures can't figure that out either?
Right. I mean, I'm not a financial whiz, but I knew that, hey, if someone's willing to throw this much money at a project that's going to be doomed for failure, I went through the paperwork as fast as I could to get out of it. So, even here in Japan, we had the same problem. We had, 2 years ago, a net influx of people coming into Kitakyushu City from different parts of Japan, because Kitakyushu City was booming. And so the construction company said, well, we have to build, apartments, and everyone connected the dots. Oh, this can't be outsourced. The Chinese can't compete with us on this. This is ours. It's a sure win. And so, like mushrooms, new apartment complexes just came up everywhere. And I'm driving past buildings now that are still being finished. And then last year, I just read, or just recently, last year there was a net decrease in population. People were leaving Kitakyushu City for other parts of Japan because there weren't enough jobs, or the jobs here weren't paying enough. And so you have all these apartment buildings that are going to be empty. And so all those, and that's a lot of money. We're talking major money. So the banks are going to go, again, bust one more time. And it's just, that's the nature of capitalism. So just, bust, bust, boom, boom, bust, bust, boom, boom, bust, and the people are going to be ending up holding the bag. So the businessmen go, golly gee, we'll bankrupt, and they go out and form another company the next day.
And it's the short-sighted, it's the short-sightedness of wanting of the pursuit of immediate wealth, as opposed to the growing of long-term stable wealth. That's part of the problem.
Exactly. I mean, and I mean,
because the short-term wealth is never stable.
Right. And the population in Japan is declining. So, I mean, we lost population last year. We're going to be losing population again this year. And so, but you know, it's the bankers, it's the businessmen, all so blinded by their greed that even the neighbor, they thought, oh, this is going to all work out. I'm feeling lucky. And compare that with the Japanese people here. I mean, most of my colleagues, university professors, you know, they don't go out and get a mortgage. They live in apartments right next to the university. They rent apartments for $90 a month, and they save their money. They work. They will work 6, 7, 8 years saving their money, and then they will buy that condo or that apartment, that house, and they will pretty much pay it off or pay 80% of it off.
Well, the Japanese people have a reputation for being some of the most scrupulous savers on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, supposedly the older people have about $10,000 in their house, just because they remember being burned last time, in the Depression in the 1930s, when they woke up and the banks had already closed and all their money was gone. So they keep around about $10,000 in the mattress. So, not everybody, but a lot. So.
Oh, when you said in the house, I thought you meant equity. You mean in the house?
No. In the house, yeah. Yeah. So.
For God's sakes, don't tell the Republicans.
Well, you know, I told you that story about, you know, them really bending on Kazumi to privatize the post office, because we have post office savings accounts here. And the post office does more things than the American post office does. We can pay our water bills, our phone bills, or whatever bills there at the post office. We can open up insurance plans. We have postal savings accounts there. And so the postal savings accounts has, so much money, and the investors, the Western investors, are just going bonkers because they couldn't get at the money. But if they privatized it, then they could get at the money. So that was Kazumi's number one thing. And for the public, it was like number 30 or number 40 in terms of priority. And once they privatized it, it all just went to, well, the convenience of it. I mean, as I told you, I had to go down to 7-Eleven to buy a stamp, because they removed the stamp machine in front of the post office. And so.
That still astonishes me.
Yeah, so. But one thing on the prostitution with Spitzer.
Yeah.
I wanted to just chit-chat. I still can't bend my mind about paying $88,000 for sex. I can't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have a good sex and everything else, but $8,000, I sponsor a child in Korea at an orphanage. And you know, that's something I've always been doing for the past 10 years. And it's about $252 per year for each child. Plus, I send extra money on top of that for clothes and presents and stuff. If you take $8,000 and you divide it by $252, you get let me do this again here. $8,000 divided by 252 gives you 31 children that he could have sponsored. So, and he could have really changed the last 31 children, almost, for the better. But he wanted a good few hours in bed for $8,000. Now, don't get me on William Bennett, who had a gambling problem.
The $8 million gambling problem, right?
Oh, is it $8 million? Oh, okay. Because I was doing $1 million, I figured that he could sponsor, 4,000 children with that.
Okay, so that's 32,000 children.
32,000. Can you imagine changing 32,000 people's lives for the better? But no, you want to, you know, and that's where the real sin comes in.
Well, yeah, and when you talk about Bennett, it's worth remembering that there is a social aspect to gambling that I do at least understand, Robert. You know, when you're standing at the craps tables and there's that crowd of people around you, and they're like, "You're hot, baby, you're hot. You got to go again, oh, man, go.
Yeah.
And, oh, you're lucky, you know, you hold the dice. There's a social aspect there that is completely comprehensible to me. But Bill Bennett, you know where the $8 million went that Bill Bennett lost in Vegas?
Where? Slot machine, was it?
He sat in his room, and they delivered him a slot machine.
Okay.
And he sat there all alone, just punching the button, punching the button, punching the button, punching the button. And forgive me, you know, it's I guess now this is the amateur psychology portion of the program, but I think that is indicative of somebody with a big problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, and I don't necessarily mean that it's a gambling problem. I mean there's a personality deficiency at work there.
Oh, exactly. And someone who sets himself up as Mr. Morality blows my mind. We have something here in Japan called pachinko.
Oh dear, I knew you were going to say pachinko. That is so addictive. I've played a pachinko machine a couple of times in my life, and it's like, ooh,
really?
I want to go again. Yeah. Oh wow.
I played it the first time I came to Japan 14 years ago, and I just couldn't see the attraction for it. And actually, I just finished a book, and I actually walked into the second pachinko parlor because in my book, the Japanese had to explain the nature of pachinko in English, and so I needed a picture. And I walked around, and so now it's all digital, and they have little pictures instead of
the the chrome metal balls don't fall anymore? It's all just digitized?
It's all digital, yeah. It's all pictures and stuff now. At least in this one. I'm sure there's a couple, you know, with the old-fashioned ones. But I tell you, Bob, it was jam-packed. This I went in at maybe 2:00 on a Friday. It was jam-packed with older, younger, 40, 50-year-olds, you know, 60-year-olds, and just sitting there for an entire day. And every year, unfortunately, we always have a case of the parents leaving the child out in the car in the summer. The child dies.
Ugh.
At least 4 or 5 of those cases every year. But it's an absolute curse, because with pachinko, it's legally not gambling, because what they do is if you take your balls, your pinballs, your ball bearings, whatever,
yeah,
and you turn them in, you would get pins or whatever, souvenirs. Okay, you trade it. It's a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the trade to the next window, and then they buy the stuff back from you, and then you get your money.
That's a little complicated.
Yeah, it takes all that 2 seconds, actually. But then it becomes legal.
Yeah, right, because it's not gambling. It's all strictly a transaction. Yeah, oh.
It's all a transaction. So, yeah, if you wanted to do something to make some money, there you go, Bob. There's your secret. And they couldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole. But unfortunately, and when I'm pretty much an anti-gambling person. I mean, I actually did some scratch, what we call it, scratch little, you know, like numbers, lotto thing yesterday.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe last week. And the little voice in my head first time said, buy scratch, you will win. You will win. And I actually went to the window and bought it, and I asked her how to do it, and she did it for me. And then she said in Japanese, I will pay you money. I said, oh, good Lord, I'm going to win. And the scratch is about $2, and then she ended up paying me $2. So then I ran.
Yeah, because you'd broken even, leave.
You broke it even, yeah, yeah.
Well, I look at gambling as a voluntary tax on the stupid.
Well, yeah, exactly. I went to Biloxi one time, Mississippi, where they had the riverboat gambling, so I had a conference there. And 8 o'clock in the morning, the people are lined up to get into the casino.
Yeah, and bear in mind, it's none of my business. You know, I take a very libertarian viewpoint of gambling, just as I do with prostitution. It's none of my business. But by the same token, you know, your analysis is correct. And frankly, I think it's just it's a commentary on what passes for marriage in the United States too. If marriages were good, and if marriages were real, and if marriages were valid, prostitution would be next to non-existent.
Non-existent, yeah. There's a real symptom of pathology there. I mean, the Japanese waste more money on pachinko than, I think it earns more money than all the car companies combined from all the sales.
Wow.
Domestic and international. Strangely enough, the Koreans own most of the pachinko, so a lot of the money goes to North Korea. That's what keeps North Korea alive.
You're kidding. Oh, my God, I had no idea. Yeah, and bear in mind, I still buy my lottery tickets. I buy my Powerball tickets, you know, once or twice a week because it's the closest thing I have to, I keep saying it's the closest thing I have to a retirement plan.
Well, I had one secretary that, again, we have stupid systems where, you know, they're on these part-time contracts. It's only 3 years and it's non-renewable and it's bye-bye. And she was hitting the horse races a lot, of course, losing, unfortunately. And then I kind of realized, well, that's very logical because in this culture, this macho culture where she's never going to get a good job or all the way she's going to have money is if she marries someone rich and or she wins at, you know, the horse races, because working is not going to pay her money. So gambling in this situation is the only way out for her. So, but unfortunately, it's a stupid man, stupid woman's dream, because, you know, I was lucky to break even, but, you know.
But
how did we get on this topic?
Well, we were wandering through the things that people do it all stemmed out of the orphan poor children sponsorship thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a way, capitalism is a form of gambling. I mean, gambling.
It's the biggest form of gambling on earth. I mean,
yeah.
I mentioned that social aspect of standing around the roulette wheel. What more accurate description is there for, say, you know, a view of the pit at the New York Stock Exchange?
Exactly. I think that's where we come for full circle. I mean, I looked at the CNN page today and I saw the Hang Seng down 1,300 points. 1,121 points down. The Nikkei is down 427 points.
And we just keep pumping funny money into our market here to maintain the illusion of liquidity.
Exactly right. I mean, the yen is now 100 yen to the dollar now. It has. I mean, the last time that was there is when I came to Japan. And I realized when I was looking at CNN a few weeks ago, the yen went down from 107 to 105, and the alarm bells were going off, and they said, well, the price of oil just went up. And I said, aha, okay, I got it now. And I was thinking that the people that were owning the stocks and owned the Exxon and Mobil, they take a beating on each time the dollar drops. And I mean, I have most of my money in Swiss francs, Bob, because it's the most stable currency. It's where the, you know.
Yeah.
And
because the Swiss are always going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And the difference between, you know, a few cents or whatever the franc is it's quite enormous. And if you own millions or tens of millions of dollar stock equity and indexed in dollars, you're taking a beating if that dollar drops down a couple cents. And so the way they're going to get it back is just by raising the price of oil. But then I realized, wait a second, it's not only them, but it's also the Saudi, your Saudi masters. Let's call them for what they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're saying, well, okay, fine. If our oil is going to be indexed in dollars, then your dollar's dropping. We're going to raise the price of oil every single time.
Sure. And yet, somehow or another, the one part of this bunko scam that I can't figure out, Robert, is how ExxonMobil, with every quarter, posts a higher profit than they have ever posted before.
Exactly.
So
it's a double-edged sword for Americans. I mean, they get burned on the import increases in imports, which is now everything. And then the price of a gasoline raises, you know, the price of food and everything else. And so it's a double-edged sword that's just going to cut and cut and cut and cut.
Right, and yet the genius economists can't figure out that as long as this is going on and wages remain stagnant, it's almost impossible to crawl out of it. You know,
they're saying that, oh, well, you know, when the dollar drops enough, then the United States will be able to start exporting its way out of this problem.
With what? What do we make here? What do we export? What do we got to export, Robert?
That's
I mean, I'm
exactly
not yelling at you.
Yeah. And that's what I said. I said, with what factories? They're all in China.
So, right. And the other thing is, every time you see an oil story, you'll eventually see a paragraph that says, experts now say that the price of oil in adjusted dollars is now approaching the highs of 1980. And I scratch my pointy little head, Robert, and I go, 1980, yeah. Who was running for president in 1980? And everybody, you know, all these people who think that Ronald Reagan was the second coming of Christ or something, these people seem to forget that he came into office and the economy was in the tank, and not just that, because Jimmy Carter didn't put it in the tank, Richard Nixon put it in the tank. And that's why it was such a sustained economic misery. Through Nixon and Ford and his stupid little win buttons. Do you remember those? And then Carter was trying to deal with it. But Reagan came into office and it stayed awful until Reagan and his thugs could dummy up another bunco scam. To take more of American working people's money and put it on the roulette wheel at Wall Street. And that's when the Dow Jones Industrial Average started climbing again. And so,
it's when I look at this, I just see it as a wild form of gambling, and it's the American people are going to be the losers.
But the thing is, you don't even have the odds with the American economy that you have buying a stinking Powerball ticket. Because at least Powerball, you've got like a 1 in 240 million chance. You don't even have that on Wall Street because it's so dummied up. It is so rigged. There's a break on the roulette wheel, you know? And I don't care if you bet red or black, it's not coming up on your side. Because every time the Fed pumps a bunch more so-called liquidity into the market, what you see the next day is that the sharks come in and grab up all the money. It's just like throwing a handful of fish food on a goldfish tank. You know, the ones that are strongest get up there and muscle out the weak ones and get all the food that's laying on the top. And it's gone again. And every time you throw the handful of food on it, that's what happens. And the little fish only get what manages to sink to the bottom. And boom, there you have it. Trickle-down economics.
Well, you know, I sent you that article from, I think, the Daily Coast about how the economy is going to play out for next year and, you know, the predictions of, you know, a serious collapse in the U.S. stock market, the price of oil may go up to $200, $300, massive layoffs of government at municipal and state levels, minimum $500 billion to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I just don't see how, you know, Obama or Clinton is going to get through this.
I don't either. And I mean, we're talking about what did the Soviet Union used to have? Austerity programs.
Right.
And the Soviet Union would announce a new austerity program, which meant that the peasants got just a little bit less, or a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
But the austerity programs never touched what were they called? The something icky, you know, good Russian word. But it never touched the apparatchiks and the autocrats and then the oligarchs at the top. They continued to eat the steak tartare and the Ocetra caviar. And there's precious little difference in our system. Now, if you say communism to a right-winger, he'll turn 7 different colors in 13 seconds and scream about freedom. But, you know, how free is somebody who makes minimum wage in America, Robert?
Oh, I mean, poverty is the biggest chain on you that you can possibly imagine. That's why I left. I was chained down to a night job at Tallahassee Memorial Hospital and a non-profit organization, but all the profit went to the board of directors and the president and his 19 vice presidents who made $200,000. And so the money that was left, it was not much for me and all the nurses and the doctors and so.
Yeah, well, not-for-profit in its sort of Republicanized version means just means that there's no shareholders who get a stake in it, that it all just, the cream rises to the top and then is skimmed.
Right.
Or we can go back to my goldfish bowl analogy, either one. It works both ways.
Yeah.
So,
I talked to your ear off enough, I think, today. But, I just wanted to point out how, you know, the economy is really just a form of a big roulette wheel. And
yeah, you've done that.
There, it's here.
Yeah.
Huh?
You've done that very well. And by the way, I'm learning some Japanese history. I've been talking about how I'm reading through Jared Diamond's book, Collapse, and I've just learned about forest management during the Tokugawa era.
Oh, okay.
And it's absolutely fascinating. Top-down micromanagement. And it, you look at it and go, well, you know, you could probably get away with that if you were serious about it. And talking about how Japan managed to live through its deforestation period without, you know, the huge soil erosion and having its society completely collapse to the point that Japan is the single most well-forested first-world nation on Earth now.
Yeah, I mean, every mountain does have its, I mean, there's no clear-cutting in this country. Every mountain is beautifully covered. It's one of the joys of living here. The only problem, though, is it reflective of the population. It's a monoculture. It's all spruce or cedar. And so we have terrible allergy problems in spring when the spruce or the cedar, you know, they put out their pollen and also it's led to some serious soil degradation because there's no variety in the soil. And so if they actually chop down the trees, which they can't do because it's not profitable because it's just too much cedar on the market or it's too much spruce on the market, the soil would just really just blow away, and it's hard to plant anything else there. So
that's fascinating to me because I told you the story about the Japanese buyers who come over here to West Virginia, did I not?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, with the royal,
and if they had
the royal polonia
planted those wonderful trees there, here, they would have been laughing. But they're, you know, the conservatives are too stupid to do that. So anyway.
All right. Well, Robert, thank you very much.
Here.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
it was a joy to talk to you, Bob.
Yeah, but you're coming into spring. Is it cherry blossoms soon or now or?
Not yet. Well, I on a couple trees there, you know, a few blossoms have appeared. This is our 1 month that we have no classes because the school system starts in April, as you know. And so I'm just sort of hanging out with my colleagues, having a little bit of wine here and there, and just, you know, finishing up some on textbooks and papers and stuff. So spring is a beautiful, beautiful time here. I enjoy it.
Well, and enjoy it for the rest of us, please. And by the way, if you ever get a chance, you've got an invitation here from the chat room. They're saying, you know, pop on in when you get a minute.
Oh, sure. I've been meaning to. It's just, you know, getting the kids off to work. I mean, off to school and stuff like that. So
sure.
But
all right. Well, take care
and have a
wonderful day, even though it's a rainy one. It's probably a pretty one.
Okay.
All right. See you, Robert.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
I love what Robert brings to the table. Can you imagine that? I mean, mathematics is all in. Oh dear, I'm pontificating. There's different kinds of math, and there are different kinds of numbers. And you take a hooker who does whatever it is she does for $4,500 a pop. And you realize what that would do in terms of changing the lives of 30 kids? Wow. Just wow. $111 a barrel oil. We're going to enjoy the heck out of that. So what we'll do is take a little break now. Chime in with your phone calls if you feel so inclined. Or listen to the song and wait and see what I babble about next. This is The Horn.
Oh, met a girl at the Rainbow Bar. She asked me if I'd beat her. She took me back to the Hyatt House. I don't want to talk about it.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Some email rolling in this evening. William says, gee, I hope the Bush wedding turns out like a scene from Carrie. Couldn't agree more. Our pal Cindy, with whom we had a lovely conversation. Me and that mouse in my pocket. Cindy and I had a lovely conversation last night. I hope you guys enjoyed it. With regard to the idea of Japanese folks having 10 grand in the house, it's not good to talk about that because it gives gangs big ideas. They like to do smash and grab in the big cities. I don't know what our Japanese audience is like, so I hope I'm not responsible for making any trouble. The banks closed in the last depression because they were uninsured, she says. Yeah, true, true. She also adds that everyone is out of money. She says, Steve and I can't afford our deductible. $500 a year per person. We don't have the grand to do it with. We're waiting for the income tax return to pay for eyeglasses and blood work that's scheduled for later this month. $1,000 a month health care premium. Can't pay the deductible in Medicare either. They want $120 a visit now for treatment. First time ever they billed for this. They're cutting Medicare. Told the doctor I need help, I can't pay. Jesus. It's everywhere. I mean, this is the... And I guess maybe that's the theme or that's the point this evening. We started out talking about homeless people. But the effects of the Bush economic miracle, the chickens are coming home to roost. And as is typical with a Republican presidency, the chickens never roost on those sons of bitches' barns. They roost on us. Homelessness, Kate says, I wish I could take folks on a tour of the Gulf Coast. Folks down here are so lucky because they don't have a house to get repossessed. Homeless is normal on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. The homeless virus is fast spreading. Folks are just not prepared to be one of them. And citing one of my... favorite movie lines. Here, I'll go ahead and play the original.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah. And then, you know, as we think about the high rollers, the profit takers, the people who run out and grab all the liquidity that gets thrown into the market to put a patina of legitimacy on this bunko scam that George Bush and his pals have foisted off on us for the last 8 years. I think about this other line from that great movie, Chinatown.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
These people, our so-called betters, these people have no concept of, well, let's just say it. They're not very smart. Because they think that buying a $15,000 umbrella stand with stockholder funds will make the people who hate them but come to their little cocktail parties like them a little better. Oh, my God, we put our umbrellas in a $15,000 stand. Muffy, they must be fabulous people. And they still go home and say, you know, they're so, well, you know, I hate going there. Oh, but did you see the $10,000 shower curtain? Muffy, it had Austrian crystals around the edge.
I know, but did you see what she was wearing?
Kate also adds, sex workers don't make that kind of money for very many years. Neither do sports stars. And how does the uninformed public assume that she is wasting the money on trivia? Maybe she's sending some kids to good schools, tending a dying mother, investing in her future. Maybe she's paying off hers and her sister's student loans. She says, no more sex, please. I have a headache.
God, Kate.
Now, see, one of the reasons I believe prostitution should be legal is because then the sex workers could organize. And they could set up things like pensions because, you know, Kate's right. There's a limited lifespan on the ability to do that kind of thing. The work life is very, very short. Very similar to, say, you know, a fleet-footed wide receiver. Who, after all, is doing something very similar to prostitution. That's the thing about prostitution, you see. Sorry, I'm doing sex anyway. Sorry about the headache, Kate. But you see, in this culture, everything is prostitution. Because prostitution itself is transactional. You give me money, I give you a service. Not me, but you know what I mean. Isn't that what happens at the insurance agent's office? Isn't that what happens at the bank? Isn't that what happens at the grocery store or the car lot? Frankly, prostitution's just a little bit more straightforward. What's the difference then? What is the difference? Well, most prostitutes, not all by any stretch of the imagination, but most prostitutes are female. And they are, the service that they are selling is the use of their sex organs. And because it's women, and because it's sexual, it must therefore be dirty and vile and sinful. But by the same token, the same crowd, Republicans and conservatives and Christians who want to make sure that they have all the freedoms in the, oh, we got to have a free market. We got to have freedom of religion. A woman cannot have freedom of her body. Whether it is the freedom to make reproductive choices, the freedom to make basic birth control choices, or the freedom to choose to either give away her sexual favors, to use Victorian language, or to sell them to the highest bidder. Where the hell are all these Republican free marketeers? Well, I'll tell you where they are. They're in the brothels. And they are paying as little as they can get away with to women, men, and in some cases, children. And they want to make sure that they keep control of that marketplace. I got to think, I'm sorry, you know, the Spitzer thing is kind of a bummer. because he did show tremendous promise. And as a consequence, I'm inclined to look at it, you know, try to do the Rubik's Cube thing and just sort of look at it from every angle out, you know, at arm's length. And I was looking at prostitution today that way, and I kept saying, well, this is just business. And then I realized that it's all about trying to keep women and their control of their lives and their body closely under guard. Because, see, unlike gay marriage, where the good Christians say, oh, I can't have gay marriage, you know, it'll be a threat to the family. Even that probably has a relationship in this. Because if anybody can marry anybody who happens to be, you know, wanting a committed relationship, then the next step is saying that you can, my God, you can hear the Christians arguing it, can't you? Well, yeah, let's, they call themselves Christians, why don't we? Yeah, okay, the religion industry. You can hear them saying, you can hear Mrs. Conservative Christian saying, but if prostitution's legal, then he'll go and he'll have sex with prostitutes because I don't like it very much. And then her hold on him is compromised. Oh, this spirals all the way down, doesn't it? But there's a story that I've sort of had in the stack for a while that I think actually works into this discussion and probably bears a good hard look. If I can find where my file folder is. A story from McClatchy Newspapers that I saw the other day. Dadgum, where'd all my March links go? Ah, here we go. We'll have it in a second. There it is. Headline, White House Congress to battle over Medicaid for the poor. Just doing a little bit of reading here. As the last months of the Bush administration dwindle away, the White House might yet face another showdown with the Democratic Congress, this one over changes in Medicaid rules that could affect millions of low-income children and adults. Bastards. Bastards. Bush administration. In the past year, the administration has tried to change the rules in a way that would reduce Medicaid spending by $15 billion. Ah, we've got to reduce Medicaid spending. Anybody want to do the math? Let's see, we've got 2 hours and 25 minutes of the program now. Multiply that by $4,000 a second, and you'll get how much has been spent in Iraq during the course of this program. But we've got to reduce spending on Medicaid. By $15 billion over the next 5 years, the federal state program pays for health care for the nation's poorest citizens, but you know that. The rule changes have brought objections from health care leaders across the country, but the Bush administration says the changes represent tighter controls on Medicaid's rising costs. Yeah, sure they do. The only tighter control on rising costs that this is going to have is that those costs will disappear because the poor that were being served by Medicaid will be thrown in the damn ditch. The rule changes are due to be enacted around Memorial Day, and they'll cut payments, among other places, to the state of North Carolina by $320 million next year alone. North Carolina State Hospital Association says workers will be hurt too. It estimates that 3,000 to 6,000 hospital jobs will be lost, up to 1,000 of those in, of course, rural areas. The Bush administration says the changes aren't at all hasty, and they're part of a needed examination of a program suffering from what federal Medicaid chief Dennis Smith called mission creep. Oh, look, we're using Iraqi-pation language in terms of health care delivery to the poor. The phrase refers to the expansion of Medicaid coverage to populations and services that the administration thinks a program for poor people should not cover. This is so offensive. This is so sickening. Mission creep. Let's quit with the cute language. Let's quit with this business of mission creep and talk about the real creeps. The Bush administration and the conservatives and the Republicans who despise, who loathe with every molecule in their body the idea of government actually being responsive to the needs of we, the people of the United States. If you're middle class and you're hanging on by like grim death to a middle class existence, do you get up in the morning and say, yeah, Jesus, life would just be so much better if those little poor bastards couldn't go to the damn doctor? Do you? If you're liberal, if you're a progressive, I'm pretty sure you don't. And that's the disconnect that we face in this country. Because you have to come to terms with the fact that there is a significant number of people in this country who do get up and who do think that way, and they think they're the Americans in the crowd. They think they're the patriots. They think, and this is the twisted reasoning that goes on inside a Republican mind, that somehow treating your fellow Americans, and the least among them, as the Bible would put it, like dirt, makes them more patriotic. That opening a spigot that pours $4,000 a second into the bloody sands of Iraq is patriotic. But watching children die for want of adequate health care is a waste of money. And so consequently, they have to talk disparagingly of Medicaid, which is actually a highly efficient delivery system, as is Medicare, as is Social Security. But they have to talk about it as though it has problems. The only problem that Medicare and Medicaid have is a so-called conservative government's unwillingness to do everything, to do anything, to make sure that it remains solvent. And guess what? We could do it. By the time we're done with this filthy Iraqupation, we will have been able to... 500 million children, I believe was the last number I saw, could have had health care for what we spend in Iraq. For what we spend throwing money down a damn hole. And yet, this miserable SOB wants to talk about mission creep. This Dennis Smith.
What really is the role of Medicaid? Raising these areas of concern is something everyone should be aware of.
No, what something that everyone should be aware of, Mr. Smith, is what a dick you are. Sorry, I guess I'm... But... How else to describe it? But meanwhile, we got to have a fight. A continuing fight over telecom immunity. Telecom immunity got stopped in the House of Representatives. So that pig-eyed, jug-eared, filthy little lout, the father of the bride, went on television today to speak to the American people and sleaze the House efforts to preserve the Fourth Amendment. Don't wait for me to do the dumb George Bush impression. Let George Bush do the dumb George Bush impression.
Second, the House bill fails to provide liability protection to companies believed to have assisted in protecting our nation after the 9/11 attacks.
You lying bastard. The spying phone companies did not protect diddly. They merely enabled your sick, twisted urge to piss all over the Constitution of the United States, you freak.
Instead, the House bill would make matters even worse by allowing litigation to continue for years.
Really? What's to stop the telecoms from acknowledging their liability or not and entering into a settlement? Nothing. Nothing at all. If they negotiate in good faith.
In fact, House leaders simply adopted the position that class action trial lawyers are taking in the multi-billion dollar law.
They haven't had a new idea in 100 damned years.
Class action trial lawyers. I remember when his stupid, cowardly little father referred to Tessel Loaford trial lawyers.
My trial lawyer buddies all went out and got tasseled loafers. Just adopting the position of the trial lawyers. No, because see, there's a bunch of us, George, who aren't trial lawyers, but, you know, down here on the lower rungs of the economic ladder, we've got a little bit more regard for the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution than you do. Assuming, of course, that you even know that the Constitution has a Fourth Amendment. And there is no connection between terrorist attacks and telecom immunity, no matter how many times he clicks his little ruby-slippered heels together and says there's nothing, no place like immunity, there's no place like immunity, there's no place like immunity.
Lawsuits they have filed. This litigation would undermine the private sector's willingness to cooperate with the intelligence community.
Screw the private sector. You've got an intelligence community? Use the intelligence community. We've seen, George, how effective your cooperation with the private sector is in something as simple as delivering water for shaving, bathing, and laundry to our troops in Iraq. Why in God's name do you expect it to... But you don't expect it to be any better, do you, George? You expect it to be just as dirty and filthy and sleazy a little feeding at the trough as every other private sector experiment that you have run in these long, terrible, miserable, seemingly interminable 8 years in which you have occupied the people's house, you bastard. That's two bastards.
Cooperation that is absolutely essential to protecting our country from harm. This litigation would require the disclosure of state secrets that could lead to...
How about that? Aunt Mabel's fudge is a state secret now.
The public release of highly classified information.
Who classified it? Well, we did. What makes it classifiable? Can't tell you. That's classified.
That our enemies could use against us.
What? The fact that you're an unconstitutional, autocratic, fascistic little son of a bitch? How are they going to use that against you? We already know, George.
And this litigation would be unfair.
To whom? To the precious little telecoms sniveling with their little noses pressed up against the frozen windowpane, looking at us, constitution-enjoying patrons in... The only unfairness here is to the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which has some of the plainest language of any part of that document. And no warrant shall issue but on a showing of probable cause. Tell me about the probable cause, George. Oh, that's right. You hate probable cause. You hate the Constitution. You hate the liberties. You go around the world saying, freedom is God's gift to man. But since God can see into our hearts, you have a right to see into our communications and our emails and our snail mail? Is that it? You're God now, George?
Because any companies that assisted us after 9/11 were assured by our government that their cooperation was legal?
No! No, damn it, no! They were assured by your administration. And you are not Louis XIV, and l'état n'est pas toi. Oh, boy. French is mighty rusty. They were not assured by the government. They were assured by people violating the Constitution who should have been removed from the government and imprisoned.
And necessary.
I'll agree. That would be necessary, the imprisonment part.
Companies that may have helped us save lives should be thanked for their patriotic service.
You know, he always goes over the top, doesn't he? They should be thanked. They should be thanked for urinating on the Constitution, on the Bill of Rights, and the American people should offer to blow them dry.
Not subjected to billion-dollar lawsuits that will make them less willing to help in the future.
What's going to make them less willing to help in the future? All it has to be shown is that they were operating legally and under color of law and within the four corners of the FISA law. Boom. There's your immunity. No lawsuits. Good faith exception that comes from U.S. v. Leon. I mean, the Fourth Amendment's not in the best of shape anyway, but this just outright kills it.
The House bill may be good for class-action trial lawyers, but it would be terrible for the United States.
That's the problem. It's not good for trial lawyers. It's good for the Constitution. It's good for that freedom you keep talking about, George. But it's bad for your cronies, whose fat might be in the fire. You don't give a tinker's damn about the telecoms. You give a damn about the telecoms dropping the dime on you. Nancy Pelosi had a surprising little response. She said, the president is wrong, and he knows it. Wow. You don't get that kind of starchy speech from Nancy Pelosi just every day.
Are you saying the president is lying?
Am I saying the president is lying? Yeah, that's the same question I got in 2001.
Nancy, the answer is yes. Just say yes.
When they asked me, when I said the intelligence on Iraq does not support the threat of an imminent threat to our country that the administration is contending. That's what they said to me then. They said, are you saying the president is lying? I said then, and I say now, I am stating a fact. The president is wrong, and he knows it. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all very much. I'm going to go and take out that little piece of spine that I just showed. I've got to pass it over to Harry Reid. We don't have an entire one put together between us. Lord God, Billy Bob. And if you ever worked in the news business, you know that in doing a newscast, you're never supposed to end on a downer. And today in Kansas, a woman was found and she'd been stuck to her toilet seat for 3 years. How about that, viewers? 3 years on the toilet. Yeah, and it's called a kicker. So here's our kicker for the night. Headline, FBI asked to probe email controversy. An ethics advocacy group asked the FBI on Wednesday, I don't know if I can get through this, to investigate the White House email controversy, saying electronic messages about the Valerie Plame affair may have been destroyed. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington is basing its request on a White House document describing an effort to recover a week's worth of missing email in 2003 from the office of Vice President Dick Cheney. Copies of those emails were used for wadding in the specially handmade shotgun shells with which he blasted his buddy's face. The missing email was from a week around the time of the Justice Department had begun a criminal investigation into who in the Bush administration leaked Plame's CIA identity to reporters. White House technicians, everybody, wink, wink, eventually retrieved email from the missing week, but it's unclear whether all the email from Cheney's office that week has been found. An investigation is warranted because of the unexplained disappearance. Unexplained. Oh, I'm going to shoot root beer out my nose in a minute. Of an entire week's worth of emails from Cheney's office while the Justice Department was investigating top White... was investigating top White House officials. Yeah. The request was outlined in a letter from the group to FBI Director Robert Mueller, who read it while he was in the toilet. The White House document that Crew relies on was placed on the public record at a February 26th congressional hearing. The starting date for the missing email, September 30th, 2003, was the day the White House Counsel's Office sent two notices to employees ordering the presentation or preservation of all material relevant to the Plame investigation. Actually, it was presentation, and it was presented for purposes of the creation of the annual September 30th, 2003 White House Memorial Bonfire. Surprisingly, no email for the missing week could be found in locations on the backup tape. Where are you when I need you, Peter? On the backup tape, where it could be expected to turn up. Technicians, there we go, technicians, you know, some drunk they brought in off the street who'd been sleeping on a subway grate. Technicians had to recover email from individual accounts stored on the backup tape. But we know about all the backup tape, right? That's the backup tape that they backed up over again and again and again and again because the cost of the Iraq War was keeping them from being able to buy more backup tapes. The Associated Press explains, a backup computer tape is a picture of how things look when the tape is created, raising the possibility that an email deleted before the tape is created will not show up. So this is our little bit of comedy for the evening. Yeah, because the FBI is going to get right on that. damn, crew, don't you realize that they've got governors to chase and hookers to find and real important stuff? Just like instead of worrying about terrorist attacks, Holy John Ashcroft was busy putting putting a curtain over the naked boobies of the aluminum justice statue. Silly, silly citizens. You want us to run around giving a damn about things like court orders and computer backup tapes and emails and the like? Who does Crew think it's dealing with? A competent government that's responsive to the needs of the people of the United States? Silly, 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 silly citizens for responsibility and ethics in Washington. Prattling on about the Bush administration following court orders, please. And as we head toward the end of the program, one last couple of things that might be worth your while. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not exactly John of Patmos raving out of my mind, living in solitary confinement on a rock in the Mediterranean or the Aegean or whatever. Because this doesn't take any special abilities or tongue speaking or floor rolling or strychnine drinking or snake handling. But do you remember way back when, who's his face, Hayden or whatever it was? The geek. The geek that runs intelligence. Said, I have decided to unilaterally destroy all of the torture tapes because they could be bad for America. Yeah, that's it. They're bad for America. And I said, yeah, right. They're up to their necks in tapes and they're using it for porno parties. Ooh, ooh, run the waterboarding. Ooh, show the dogs again. I like it when they do the dogs. Well, you know, not that I'm trying to rub it in or anything, but headline from the New York Times, Pentagon cites tapes showing interrogations. The Defense Department is conducting an extensive review of the videotaping of interrogations at military facilities from Iraq to Guantanamo Bay, and so far it has identified nearly 50 tapes, including one that showed what a military spokesman described as the forcible gagging of a terrorism suspect. The Pentagon review was begun in late January after the Central Intelligence Agency, what I was just talking about, acknowledged that it had destroyed its own videotapes of harsh interrogations. Jesus! The New York Times is so full of weasel words, it's amazing that the newspaper will stay still when you open it up on the kitchen table. Harsh interrogations. Torture! Conducted by CIA officers. The review was supposed to establish clearer rules for any videotaping of interrogations, they said. But they acknowledged it had been complicated by inconsistent taping practices in the past. You know, the camera gets kind of shaky under certain circumstances, and you know. As well as uncertain policies for when tape could be destroyed or must be preserved. Well, if it gets subpoenaed, it gets destroyed. Whoops! Who knew that big magnet was standing over there? Of course, I've also made the point that they said they destroyed tapes. Didn't say a word about destroying discs, or destroying DVDs, or destroying hard drives. You know, little hard drive video cameras are pretty cheap now, and they're very, very handy. The official said the nearly 50 tapes they identified documented interrogations of two terrorism suspects, Jose Padilla, we've got tape of them rotting his mind again, and Ali Almari. They were made at a Navy detention site, the Brig, in Charleston, South Carolina,
while where the two men were being tortured, I mean being held. So they're there. Oh, our buddy Jeff Morrell, who said, just drink the bottled water, that guy, he also cautioned that the review was incomplete. Then Don Black, a flack for the Defense Intelligence Agency, said interrogation videotapes had been routinely destroyed if they were judged to have no continuing value. Oh, I bet those tapes are suddenly going to become utterly without the... You know, we put them on eBay and we couldn't get it. You know, we put it, you know, one of those penny auctions where all you have to do is pay the penny and the shipping, and nobody'd take, so they obviously have no value. We destroyed them a minute and a half ago. Two government officials said one of the tapes shows Mr. Mari being manhandled by his interrogators, but did not show waterboarding or any other treatment approaching what they believed could be classified as torture, because their beliefs are, of course, the benchmark standard for whether or not it is torture. According to one Defense Department official, the interrogators dispensing the rough treatment always comes back to something related to a hooker, doesn't it? The rough treatment on the tape were FBI agents. Consequently, an FBI spokesman declined to comment, saying that he was too busy laughing his ass off over Cruz's request for emails from the White House. No, citing a continuing review of detention practices that's being carried out by the Department of Justice's Inspector General. You just can't beat this. I mean, you couldn't pay to have this stuff written. Except maybe by the New York Times, who is probably credulous enough to believe it. They, after all, believe that Saddam has weapons-related program activities, Candy. And over that helped us start a war against some pathetic people in the land between the rivers. A quick fundraising update for you, just to let you know. We are coming up on halfway through the month of March, and I know how tough it is. I know it's bad tough out there. But I owe you the duty, since we ask you, the listeners, to keep us going. I owe you the duty of letting you know where we stand. And where we stand right now is on thin, melting, cracking ice. Because we are nearly halfway into the month of March, and we've raised, wait for it, about $200 of the $2,000 that is required to keep us going on a month-to-month basis. Just thought you'd want to know. Also, over at WhiteRoseSociety.org, I would like for you to go over there and have a look at the main page there, at what Ben has put up and what Ben has written. And have a look at the link of the email he recently received from that bastion of liberal broadcasting, Air America, telling him that, by God, you will not archive Randy Rhodes or Tom Hartman anymore. And you will destroy everything you have. That, of course, will and has eliminated about, well, over a third of the traffic to White Rose, and at the same time has cut donations at White Rose dramatically. Ben has carried this on his back with never a word to me or to the president of Head On, the Horn, Wayne, about needing, wanting us to write a check to him. So he's going to do a little fundraising as well. So I hope you can help Ben, and I hope you can help us keep going. Kind of grim right now, to tell the truth. Hated getting that little notice last month. Kind of nerve-wracking. But we'll be here tomorrow night. Hope you will, too. Hope you'll stick around for the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, hosted by the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with Strictly Confidential. very special night coming up tonight on All Foxed Up with John Fox as he hosts Days of the News, Travis Meeks. This is amazing radio, even if I do say so myself. Many thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and all its dedicated members for all the hard work that they do and for their partial sponsorship of Horn Programming. crmw.net, be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 125 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, right here exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. They're also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. They're located at crmw.net. That's Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Please stop by and have a look and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday.